So, are creationists lunatics, as Dawkins might have us believe? Well, you can judge for yourself. Paul Nelson is a creationist, and a fellow at the Discovery Institute. He also has a PhD in the philosophy of science from the University of Chicago.
You know, I don't think I've ever met anyone who holds your view. The occasion was a departmental reception at the University of Chicago in the late 1980s. The sort of event where 20-something graduate students calm their nervous energy with glasses of sherry and try to appear thoughtful. I was speaking with a young woman, a fellow graduate student, whose father was a well-known paleontologist at Berkeley. "So there really are people like you," she said, "creationists." I'm sure I smiled. What else can one do with a statement like that? Still, her remark made me feel odd, as if she had just stumbled across some fabled subspecies of Homo sapiens. The anthropological surprise in her tone was strange, not least because she almost certainly had met someone like me before, even if she grew up in Berkeley. It's a matter of statistics. Surveys consistently show that a majority of Americans doubt Darwinian evolution, the theory of the common descent of life on Earth, via undirected mutation and natural selection. Of course, there is regional variation in the acceptance of evolution. Berkeley, Cambridge, Madison, and Seattle are likely to give different numbers than, say, Little Rock, Peoria, or Sioux Falls. But pick 100 Americans at random, put them in a room, and about 70 to 80 people will express skepticism about the theory of evolution. Now, if you're listening to me in Berkeley or Cambridge, you may be shaking your head. Americans, you might say, are badly educated in science. Thus, it's no surprise that when poor science teaching is combined with religious fundamentalism, a lot of our fellow citizens end up rejecting the Darwinian revolution. Let me give you another perspective, however. It isn't really scientific. It's philosophical, and it's probably the deepest question I face. This question, I think, more than any other fact, explains why doubts about Darwinian evolution persist. The question has two parts. Here's the first. Is it possible that an intelligence was involved in the origin and diversification of life on Earth? Here's the second part. If intelligence was involved, shouldn't science be free to investigate that possibility? Notice that religion doesn't play much of a role in this question. What really drives it is wonderment about what might be true. The world of 19th century natural history, Darwin's world, is long gone. Could Darwin have imagined the discoveries that have turned the cell from the largely featureless entity of his time into the complex system of molecular machines we know today? Francis Crick, for many the greatest theoretical biologist of the 20th century, said that biologists must constantly remind themselves that what they see was not designed but evolved. Now, why is that? Why, for instance, does the language of information processing, code, sequence, transcription, translation, fit so naturally with the fundamental patterns of all organisms? How does such information arise? Once questions like these lodge themselves in one's consciousness, along with wonderment about the possibility of intelligent design, the usual answer, namely, leave it to natural selection, rapidly becomes less than satisfying. Natural selection is a real process, to be sure, supported by abundant evidence. But can it do the work of building complex organisms? To ask that question is also to ask for the freedom to seek the answer wherever it may be. That's not religious prejudice. It's basic curiosity. That young woman who was startled by me 20 years ago over sherry is a professor today. If we met again at a university party, I know how I'd respond. While creationist has become a term of abuse, the idea of creation itself, of a rational and intelligible order rooted in primal intellect, was central to the birth of Western science. For a Christian like me, the river of knowledge called science and the river of understanding called religion have the same source. And thus the responsive joy I have to a scientific discovery is not so very different from that of reading a psalm. In his Religio Medici, Sir Thomas Browne, a contemporary of Newton, wrote, "Nature is the art of God." That's my laptop screensaver. It's also wisdom, from which science has little to fear.
Paul Nelson is a fellow at the Discovery Institute.